This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
What hit us?
Small asteroid fragments.
This morning, how big were those?
Those were nothing. The size of basketballs and Volkswagens.
This new one you're tracking, how big?
It's the size of Texas, Mr. President.
It's what we call a global killer. The end of mankind.
Half the world will be incinerated by the heat blast. And the rest will freeze to death in nuclear winter.
Basically the worst parts of the Bible.
Hitting the rock from the outside won't do the job.
So we nuke this thing from the inside?
How?
We drill. We're bringing the world's best deep core driller.
The United States government has just asked us to save the world.
We're talking about space, right? Outer space? This is like deep blue hero stuff.
I'm there.
I'm with you.
Beam me up, Scotty.
I want all of you listening to know that everything that can be done to wage this terrible battle is being called into service. May we all see these events through with the courage worthy of this challenge.
Indeed, may we all. BFM 89.9, it is 7:39 and you are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila and Michael, who is today sitting in for Arvin. And Michael Chang is basically a, I think we have had you on our other shows before, though perhaps not on Popcorn Culture, a pop culture writer at The Star. Michael, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, glad to be here and welcome to the end of the world.
That is the spirit. That is exactly what we want to hear. So today, we are talking about disaster films. And I think at the outset, we should probably say what that is. Although hearing that trailer of Armageddon, I think more or less sets it up. There's usually some sort of global threat. There's something world ending. They're going to come up with a series of ludicrous solutions. One of them makes it somehow. And that's kind of the general pathway of the film.
I love that you said ludicrous, because somehow for me, like, that's one of the key elements that separates a disaster movie from, let's say, something that is about a natural disaster, but actually has more like pathos and an actual storyline. Like that one with Naomi Watts and the one on the tsunami. I can't remember the title, but I don't think of that when I think disaster movie, because that's actually like a humanitarian drama sort of story. Disaster movie, though, definitely has these like large outsized tropes. It has spectacle, it has heroes, and the villain is basically the disaster. I'm still on the fence. I'm not sure whether I'm a fan or not, I have to say. I think I often gravitate towards what is actually a disaster movie. Like, is it only natural disasters? You know, do aliens wanting to wipe out the world count as a disaster? Because, I mean, that's pretty disastrous.
Yeah, well, when Sharmila approached me about this topic, my first question was, what's a disaster movie? Is it just natural disasters? Do aliens count? Does Transformers count? Does a pandemic count? So what is a disaster movie? Maybe that, then it just completely blew your mind, because how about Roland Emmerich? He's a disaster of his own.
Unnecessary this early in the show, but okay.
I don't agree. Unnecessary. I think if you're going to talk about disaster movies, Roland Emmerich should probably come up at the soonest possible moment. I think he's called the King of Disaster or something. Like, he has that kind of moniker. So that's his thing. I guess we might all define it slightly differently. For me, anything in which a disaster is a focal point in the film, whether or not it is the heart of the story, the point is that there is a disaster that is trying to be averted. It can be man-made, extraterrestrial, or natural. I accept all comers, as long as there is some sort of population threat and the president is called and there's the Pentagon involved. Like, as long as those things are there and it takes place in America, because no one ever wants to destroy anywhere else, then I consider it a disaster film.
I think that if the disaster only extends to, like, maybe the people on a boat. Perhaps it's not really a disaster movie, because I keep seeing things like Poseidon Adventure being classified as a disaster film, and I never thought of it that way. And you know, if you do, that's totally fine. Again, I realize now in this conversation that the definition of a disaster movie can be quite a sliding scale, and I'm open to it. But yeah, I think a mass number of people need to be at danger, even better if it's the whole world. And then there needs to be sort of a hopelessness at the start before we can kind of rise to the occasion as humanity to defeat whatever the threat is.
That kind of sounds like a Roland Emmerich movie.
Yes, I think so. I think my shaping is definitely from him.
Back to what I said about what is a disaster. I mean, if you're talking only about natural disasters, how about Twister? I mean, it's very localized in a small state in US where these few guys are just chasing twisters around. Is that a disaster movie? Because not like three people are like in danger, maybe a single farmhouse.
At least two towns were in danger, weren't they? I mean, not towns with many people. So, admittedly.
So I think there, while Twister isn't like, you know, we're not talking about worldwide tornadoes, it's not Geostorm, right? Geostorm is basically Twister writ large. I think the reason why Twister works is because it played with the level of destruction that it was willing to show and threaten. So while it may be a very small space, the amount of like wrecking of the farmhouse that they were willing to do was very great. And so because of that, it compensates for the fact that like 20 people were in danger, one set of people in a car, you know. So it's not, I think, always about the scope. Although for me personally, when I, the ones that immediately leap to mind are always very large, which is also perhaps why sometimes this genre of film for me is a little bit candy-like, a little bit fast food-like. I cannot do so many of them in a row because there's only so many times you can watch New York or Washington being threatened. But when you throw in things like Twister, which we're going to play later on, when you throw in things like Contagion, which we're going to play later on, then I think it opens it up a little bit more to variety.
You say that, but I could actually watch oil riggers in astronaut suits walk towards us with dramatic music.
Slow motion.
In slow motion. Any number of times. And we started with Armageddon. And I think that's because even today, even what, almost two decades after the film came out, it's still so emblematic of a particular kind of disaster film. I know, Michael, you, for instance, are a bigger fan of Deep Impact that came out at the same time and then kind of got sidelined in many ways by Armageddon. But I think Armageddon basically does this genre in that kind of on steroids way that sticks in your mind.
Well, it's Michael Bay after all, so
yes,
he does movies like that. But how about stuff like Godzilla, like the monster movies, like Godzilla, the first few ones were just one city and two cities, but the last one, the one, the Titans, they just completely wiped out the entire world. So are those disaster movies as well?
Okay, again, I'm going to argue, I appear to be the only one advocating for like the widest possible scope, but I think yes, simply because the world is at stake. Because if Godzilla were to, I don't even know what the real threat is here, because those films are so confusing, but if Godzilla were to do whatever it is that Godzilla has the full capacity to do in the context of those movies, then the world would be seriously endangered, unlike Kong. Because Kong does not have the same destructive capacities, simply not as good a swimmer, la, frankly. If Kong were a better swimmer, then maybe we would see something different.
I can't believe we are now discussing the finer points of which monster wreaks what kind of havoc and what qualifies as a disaster. I don't know. For me, creature features are a bit different. And things like Godzilla and Kong always fall under creature feature. But I mean, look, if we're just talking about what it looks like to watch the world burn on screen, I'm happy to include all of these for the sake of the conversation, particularly because I think I'm really looking forward to hear what comes to mind for people listening when we say disaster movie? Is it Godzilla? Is it Armageddon? Or is it like Poseidon's Adventure?
So that's the question that we're asking. Firstly, when we say disaster movie, right, what comes to mind? But also, do you have a favorite? I mean, do you like watching the world and cities and forests and homes and people get destroyed over and over again on screen? Is this something that appeals to you? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. So if we started with Michael Bay, then we have to now go to the Michael Bay of disaster movies. And that is, of course, Roland Emmerich. In what you would argue, I think people can argue, is his masterpiece. Here's a little bit of Independence Day.
Mr. President, is that glass bulletproof?
No, sir.
Are you all right?
I saw his thoughts. I saw what they're planning to do.
They're like locusts. They're moving from planet to planet. Their whole civilization. After they've consumed every natural resource, they move on. And we're next.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
PFM 89.9, it is 7:50. You are listening to Popcorn Culture, and it is, of course, Thursday, which means it's our supercut. You are with Lynn, Sharmila, and Michael, who is sitting in for Arvin, and together we are talking about disaster movies, just the most yelling, I think, that we're likely to hear over the air, because it's just about stuff, films that enjoy destroying cities, the earth, all sorts of things. So we've now come to the nature segment of our show, because that was, of course, a bit of Twister. And I think, Michael, you previously mentioned that for you, this is maybe the truest form of the art.
I wouldn't say the truest form, but it's more like a distilled version of a disaster movie. I mean, everything's compact into one little state, and like the cow that flies around the tornado is probably the one that's the most in peril. But compared to, let's say, 2012 and The Day After Tomorrow, where everything's on an epic scale, this one feels a bit more personal. That's why I preferred Deep Impact over Armageddon, because there were more human emotions. You saw what the people were feeling rather than what they were yelling about.
I love Twister, actually, and I forgot how much I loved it when I watched it until I had to not watch the whole movie again, but sort of look at some clips, because you're right. I mean, one of the nice things about Twister is because it's not dealing with hordes and hordes of people around the world, it actually doesn't have to do that thing that most of these movies do, which is pan the crowd. Random gratuitous shots of five different countries around the world to show you that the rest of the world is suffering as well. Instead, like, Twister is really lean and mean. So it has all of the disaster movie trappings, some of those scenes with them driving into the core of the volcano, and that what we just heard, the left, right, left, like, it's actually really cool to watch even today. I mean, the movie came out in 1996, I think. Still looks really good. But at the same time, you don't have to put up with some of the excesses of the genre that can otherwise become a little annoying.
So actually that was something I wanted to pick up on, which is the localness of Twister. So this is something that we started off with, right, talking about how it's quite concentrated. But I think the other part of it is that we have lots of weather phenomenon here, but Twister isn't necessarily one of them. So I remember as a kid, or, you know, when I was younger, watching Twister and being kind of blown away. Sorry, that was an accident. I'm being kind of blown away.
Don't lie, you worked on that.
Hey, no, no, how dare you? But just...
It blew my mind.
Thank you.
Oh my God, here
thank
we go.
You. But yeah, it. Now I can't say my thought, but I was really intrigued by it because it was just a weather phenomenon that I was not familiar with. And I think now in our race towards who can destroy the world in the most creative way, we sometimes forget, I think, how devastating nature can actually be. And so there's something appealing about that. And it's why I think you get to have what you described, Sharmila, a film that has that excessive quality which you want from a disaster film without being excessive in and of itself.
I think also in nature films, the great thing is that the thing they're fighting is not the villain, because it just is. And in fact, I think in today's world, when we're talking about climate change and global warming and all of these things, I would actually like to see a smart revival of these sorts of disaster movies, because I feel like they'd be so relevant today. Something like Don't Look Up, of course, kind of tried to do that in a satirical way. But just a straight up like weather phenomenon, how damaging it can be, the kind of fear it can invoke, I would really like to see more people do that.
One thing I noticed when I was researching this topic, a lot of the best disaster movies were like in the 90s and the 2000s and 2010s. I mean, 2012 was in 2012. And the big difference between the movies then was and now is you get a lot of CGIs and people like the big pan shots, crowd shots of people dying and all these big disasters. It didn't feel like that when we were watching Twister or we were watching Deep Impact or Armageddon, because it felt very personal. It felt very emotional, right? The focus was on the people rather than the disasters, whereas nowadays it's a lot of CGI. So they try to make the big money shots and everything, put it in trailers, and that's it. And that's the whole story.
There is something to that. I did also want to ask, though, because we didn't really fully establish at the start of the show, do we like disaster movies? I mean, is this something we enjoy? I think collectively, as a movie-going audience, we certainly do, because even the ones that are not great actually end up making money, and they cost money to make. You know, these special effects don't come for free. So they do, firstly, cost a fair amount of money to make. They do, however, keep making money, which is why they continue getting funded. So I think collectively, there seems to be a genuine appreciation for some reason. Maybe it's cathartic to watch the world get destroyed. But I wanted to know, between the three of us, do we like them?
I lean more towards exactly what Michael said, the 90s, early 2000s brand of disaster films. I haven't seen newer ones that have appealed to me. I mean, I'll watch them and they're always great, like bang for the buck, because spectacle,
yeah, but Moonfall,
big screen.
Though.
Moonfall, see, I watch them with a very different lens. I don't watch them in like, oh my God, like this. It's more like I want to throw popcorn and laugh. Again, I think I like the genre as a whole, but it's become a little bit of a laughing stock at the moment.
I think it's the whole CGI, and because of all the blockbusters coming out with all the superheroes, people get tired. People are getting tired of seeing the world getting in peril again and again and again. So I think if they go back to the, like you said, the natural disaster side, and with maybe a bit more localized stuff, and maybe really focus on the disaster itself rather than the people who are dying all around the world, then maybe then we could have a better movie and people will probably gravitate more to it. Because right now it feels like it's similar to the superhero movies that are all about the big action and all the big disasters as well.
So I think for me, I fall between two stools. I either want my disaster movie to be like Moonfall, where it's so crazy, like it's invested in its own crazy, it's bought stock in its own crazy, it's just like really, really into it, and then I get really into it and swept away. So either I want that, where I really could not care less about the people in it. I just want to see where else this can go, right? Like, how far out into the sea are we going here? But on the flip side, I also like the smaller stuff. So I want it one of two ways, right? Either I want like the crazy Moonfall Independence Day stuff, or the smaller Twister things. And the ones in between, I think, are the ones that I don't tend to find a lot of joy in.
Yeah, I didn't say whether I liked it or not. So I think I quite like this kind of movies because you get to see a lot of action, you get to see people in peril, the world in peril, and all sorts of stupid ideas coming out all over the place. But in the there's a reason why all these movies are making money, because people want to see other people suffering, I think. It's not going to happen to me. I mean, this is everything is on the silver screen. It's not going to happen to me. And that's why I like it so much. But I think as we get into more of the climate change things, like don't look up and everything, I think it's starting to hit home. So I'm not sure whether people are going to like natural disaster movies more from now on.
That's a really good point. Let us know. We're talking today about disaster films, just the films that are really invested in destroying the world in some form or another, man-made, nature, whatever. We'd like to hear from you. Do you have favorites? And do you even like this form of movie? You can let us know by WhatsApping 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. And now from tornadoes to volcanoes, here's a little bit of Dante's Peak.
I want you to remember, no one should leave tonight without a copy of the town's emergency evacuation plan. They will be handed out at the door on your way out. I'd like to turn the floor over now to Dr. Harry Dalton.
Excuse me. I would like to underline that these are just precautionary measures. We don't want to start a panic.
Did anybody feel that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please remain calm. Please just stay with me.
About that.
Just stay calm. Thank you. Don't push. Please stay calm. Do not rush. Do not.
Break from monotony. BFM 89.9.
It was a groundbreaking ceremony for a new factory.
Did she mention seeing anyone who was sick? Anyone on a plane at the airport?
No. She said she was jet lagged.
The average person touches their face 3 to 5 times every waking minute. In between, we're touching doorknobs, water fountains, and each other.
Beth. Mom? No, go up to your room, honey.
So we have a virus with no treatment protocol and no vaccine at this time.
You had a seizure this morning, Beth.
She had a history of seizures.
No.
Allergies.
As of last night, there were 32 cases.
Is there any way someone could weaponize the bird flu? Is that what we're looking at?
Someone doesn't have to weaponize the bird flu. The birds are doing that.
Watch this. It's transmission, so we just need to know which direction.
On day one, there were 2 people, and then 4, and then 16. In 3 months, it's 1 billion. That's where we're headed.
They're calling out the National Guard. They're moving the president underground.
People will panic.
Get away!
It will tip over.
The truth is being kept from the world.
BFM 89.9, it is 8:08 and you're listening to Popcorn Culture. It is our supercut, of course. So you are with Lynn Sharmila and Michael Chang, who is sitting in for Arvin today. So we are talking today about disaster movies. Although that one, I think a lot of people in 2020 started feeling maybe documentary, you know, fiction or documentary. And that was, of course, Steven Soderbergh's Contagion. So I think I wanted to pick up, before we get to the messages that we're getting, by the way, keep them coming. We're talking about disaster films, like I said. So anything counts, anything that kind of threatens human existence. Let us know if this is a form of film that you like. And if you have some favorites, you can WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. So before we went to the news, Michael, you were saying that maybe in time with climate change that we might lose our fondness for disaster movies. Having said that, lots of people were watching Contagion at the height of the pandemic. Like, it was a thing that people were doing to cope.
Good point. But it also hit home very, very hard, because at the time when we were all under lockdown, and then you saw all these images of famous tourist spots all empty, the roads were empty, Times Square was empty. That was scary, scary stuff. That was almost like from a movie. So is an outbreak, is a pandemic a disaster? I think after living through this, I think we can safely say it is.
I'm not one of those people who were like, oh, you know what I want to do now? Go revisit Contagion. Contagion was an excellent film. It was bad enough for me the first time around. I remember watching it in the cinema and progressively moving away from my seat back, removing my arms from where you put your arms, and then washing my hands after the movie, just because it's so real. And now all of this stuff we've been through. It got me thinking, though, about how with disaster movies, the element of time is actually quite important. There's a reason why our gradually warming planet is not going to make a great disaster film, because 1,000 years or 500 years or 200 years isn't really the kind of death-defying thing that makes for good cinema. What people want is, we have 5 days, we have 2 months. Even with Contagion, they needed to kind of accelerate the kind of damage it did. I mean, we saw a similar version of it play out around us, but admittedly, I mean, it did take us half a year, 1 year to kind of see it unfold. The movie compresses it into a much shorter amount of time. I think time actually makes a big difference. So the disaster movies all need to have an urgency of, this needs to be resolved next week.
I think there's another thing about this kind of pandemic and disease kind of movies. I mean, you can't see the disease itself. You can see the symptoms. You can see people dying, dropping dead out of it. So, but it doesn't make compelling film to watch people just dropping dead on the streets. Well, it's scary, but it's not exciting. So they have to do it like, oh, this power station, the chief engineer just died and dropped into a turbine and it exploded. And now everybody's going to die because there's no power and there's fires everywhere. Now that is a disaster movie. But a Contagion itself, on an outbreak itself, just isn't that big of a blockbuster material, I think.
So I'm interested by both of those points, because I was thinking about how much struggle we are willing to put up with in a disaster movie. So, and by that I mean, obviously you want to see something insurmountable, right? Like an asteroid that needs Bruce Willis in a drill. Like that's important. You need something where the president is going to agree to, like, yeah, let's nuke it. But you want those kinds of scaling up. But at the same time, I don't think you want the tedium that is involved with, you know, no longer having cars, for example, because oil doesn't work. So now we have to walk. Like, nobody really wants to necessarily watch that kind of struggle. And I think that it's something about the patience or impatience that people have to watch the world get destroyed, but also to therefore reach the resolution. Because ultimately, right, like, we're talking about disaster movies as if they are all only the beginning and the middle. But actually, I think the ending is probably one of the most important aspects of this film, of this genre of film, because you need to see, you need to be left feeling something. Otherwise it's too empty, I think. And for that reason, both these elements of, like, how much struggle are we willing to put up with, how much time are we willing to go through in the film, but also sitting there in the cinema, all these things lead to, like, successful disaster movies versus disaster movies.
Because the those things you mentioned, the tedium, the details, the cars not working, electricity not being a thing, having to cart water, those then become actually more a dystopian or a post-apocalyptic film, because you're then dealing with the aftermath of a disaster rather than the disaster itself. Sweet Tooth, for example. I mean, obviously, it comes in the wake of a disaster, also a contagious pandemic kind of thing. But on the other hand, it isn't actually a disaster TV show, if such a thing exists. I think the other thing is, of course, the how much struggle we're willing to put up with. I, for instance, don't fancy disaster films where there's too much goriness, I think. For me, the whatever that's happening is big enough a deal. The asteroid, the hurricane, the tsunami, or whatever. I don't need to see body parts flying around or people being gored to death. And I don't know why that is, because I'm not averse to violence. But somehow, in disaster films, I essentially want to be able to see humans kind of naked or not be tortured too much.
I think I just want to see disaster movies where disasters actually happen and not just looking at people crying and running towards people and yelling and stuff. I mean, there's a disaster happening. Stop showing them. I want to see more buildings falling down. I want to see more twisters. I want to see more tornadoes. I mean, okay, it's very high budget, but then it's what people want to see. People
Since
don't want to see
the guy who earlier voted for Deep Impact over Armageddon.
I like, okay, you know why I like the impact? Because Armageddon, okay, I like Armageddon too, but Deep Impact, I liked it because the asteroid actually fell, okay, half of it. And we saw what happens when it falls. And that was the disaster. Whereas Armageddon, the asteroid did not fall at all. People were running around, oh, we're going to save the world, we're going to save the world. But then this bunch of guys are there blowing up the asteroid and the world never gets any damage at all. There's like a few stray rocks flying around, but then there's no peril to the world. It's just those guys in the asteroid. So that's why I like Deep Impact, because there was an actual disaster.
You're really leaning into the whole other people's pain schadenfreude thing, aren't you? Because at this point, that's what you're saying.
Isn't that what disaster movies are? People want to see the disasters happening. What's the point of watching a disaster when the disaster doesn't happen?
I get you. You want to see the disaster. You don't necessarily want to see people kind of dropping like flies, but you want to be able to like get in the eye of the storm.
Yeah, that's why I like Twister as well, because you got to see a lot of twisters. And then you got those scientists running into the twister itself. So you got to see inside and outside of the disaster. And you got to see cows flying around inside the twister. So that was fun. It was fun. Disaster movies are not meant to be thought. They are, okay, you can be thought-provoking, but they should be fun as well. That's what you go to the cinema to watch. You want to see things exploding. You want to see Godzilla stomping stuff. You don't want to see Bryan Cranston running around trying to stop Godzilla. Because you just want to see Godzilla, right? So that's what a disaster movie should be. It should be fun. It should be big. It should be loud. Maybe have a message, but you want more of the disaster rather than the people's reaction to it.
So we've been asking you, basically, do you like disaster movies? And if so, what are some of your favorites? And I thought we could run through some. So Shane on Twitter says, The Happening by M. Night Shyamalan, a disaster movie that is a disaster, at least for me.
Okay, The Happening is abjectly a bad film. I can't even defend M. Night Shyamalan. I must say that on paper, the concept felt like it could be something, but my God, that movie.
Why are we talking about The Happening? I'm trying to forget it ever happened.
Meanwhile, we have Jeremy who says, at some point, you should be talking about 2012. I showed my kids the movie and told them Mom and Dad survived the apocalypse. And I think, firstly, okay, I guess we rebuilt very well in the time after 2012. That's one thing to note if you're going to persist with the story. But the other thing is, honestly, that film is, I suppose, in some ways, I think it's generation defining, because 2012 was maybe the last movie that hits within that era that we're talking about, the 90s, 2000s, early 2010s, when for some reason, disaster movies were really like, all over the place. Now they're like two or three times a year. But there was a time where it was like every other film seemed to be a disaster film. And 2012 was kind of the end of it.
That's because superheroes came in. Iron Man started in 2008. So yeah, that's when all the Avengers all started coming. So the MCU started taking over the cineplexes.
That's a really good point. And I hadn't thought of that. I also wanted to confess that I constantly mix up Day After Tomorrow in 2012, because the posters and all the publicity stuff look exactly the same. It's the Statue of Liberty half buried by snow or water or whatever that is. I legitimately had to look it up, and then I realized I still can't tell the difference because they all look the same.
That's part of it, right? Actually, I want to get into that, but in the last part of our show, basically to tear the genre apart with its American exceptionalism and all the rest of it. But we do have a list from Jesper, and it's quite a list, actually. So I'm going to run through them, and as usual, do it in chunks. So let's start with Daylight, Twister, Earthquake, Turbulence, Day After Tomorrow 2012, Vertical Limit, Frequency, Ladder 49, Airplane 1 and 2, Airport, The Bunch, Towering Inferno, Titanic, The Poseidon Adventure, Poseidon, The Wave, Independence Day, The Bunch, San Andreas, Noah.
So those actually remind me of one of the disaster films that actually get to me, and I'm not going to say I don't enjoy them, but actually terrify me the most, which is fire disasters. And they're not necessarily world ending, maybe, you know, like a community ending or a block ending. But they really scare me. And I think that goes back to the I have a real fear that this could happen somewhere I live.
I don't like water. The Poseidon Adventures, the Titanics, I don't like the waters. This whole swimming stuff, and suddenly there's a shark coming in. It's the genre tends to be a bit cliche for me, but it's not so much of the scariness of it, but it's a bit more of a, yeah, there's just, I don't know, they tend to be a bit too cliche for me.
I found Backdraft really frightening. I remember watching that when I was younger and just getting entirely freaked out. Jesper goes on to say, Armageddon, Dante's Peak, Deep Impact, all of which we've talked about, Perfect Storm, Volcano, The Core, The Impossible, Contagion, Geostorm, Into the Storm, Pompeii, Flood, Hard Rain, Meteor, First Man, Gravity, Ad Astra, United 93, World Trade Center, Sully, Extinction, Crawl.
Impossible is the film I was thinking about earlier that I couldn't think of the name of. Ad Astra and Gravity, they pop up in a lot of lists, and I find that so interesting because essentially the disaster there isn't necessarily it's one person going through something, right?
That's what I said. What is a disaster movie? Is it because the world is ending? Is it because one person is dying? Is it because a town is in peril? So what is a disaster movie? Is it zombies? Okay, how about zombies? What are zombies? What are zombie movies? Are these disaster movies or are they just like zombie movies, horror movies?
If we're calling it a zombie apocalypse, surely it is a disaster movie.
Well, you did start off by saying you're open to the widest possible definition of this. I think I'm a little bit more tied to the genres. So if I think of something as an alien film or a zombie film, then I'm less likely to think of it as a disaster film. But I can see how it could fit.
Yeah, but all the disease movies, they're a lot more interesting when it becomes a zombie movie at the same time.
That's the thing, right? And it's always about the, I don't know, I think that we spoke earlier about how watching people get ill and so on maybe isn't the most exciting. Whereas watching people get ill and then bite other people, you know, that's the logical next step to what we want to see.
Because
apparently.
Then it moves away from being too real again. And then perhaps that's the thing. I mean, zombies, fantasy, actual pandemic, not so much.
Let's see. Jesper goes on to say, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, Moby Dick. These I'm starting to not agree with so much simply because I think that they're not sort of community threatening, right? It's smaller stories. But then, yes, definitely includes the Cloverfields, Godzilla, Widowmaker, Transformers, the various Transformers, and then a bunch of shark movies, actually. So Deep Blue Sea and so on.
Very interesting list of movies, which again, not all I would immediately think of as a disaster film. But I am intrigued by the mention of the shark films, because I think if we can accept that a town can be threatened by Bruce the Shark or an entire seaside area, then I suppose they count, right? Even though they're also creature features.
Okay, so, I want to ask the question. When you mentioned the first thing that came to your mind when you said disaster film, what was the first film?
Armageddon.
Independence Day for me.
Oh, mine was Twister, because for some reason that Twister movie just came to me, and that cow scene always comes to me. But also because it was also the first disaster movie I watched in the cinema. I think I was very young at the time, and it was in a small town in Pahang, and then it just happened to be showing there, and I went there and saw it, and then I was quite freaked out by it because of this whole, because it's so big, it's a tornado.
So we'd like to hear from you again. Basically, do you enjoy disaster movies? And if so, what are some of your favorites? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back for more after this, including a clip about a space film, which I think we can debate since we have been debating it this whole time. So yes, in the meantime, keep those thoughts coming. You're listening to Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Business. Finance and music. BFM 89.9.
Well, my dad was a farmer. Like everybody else back then. Of course, he didn't start that way. The wheat had died. The blight came and we had to burn it. And we still had corn. We had acres of corn. But mostly we had dust. I guess I can't describe it. It was just constant, just that steady blow of dirt. We wore little strips of sheet, but sometimes over our nose and mouth, so we wouldn't breathe so much of it.
Well, when we set the table, we always set the plate upside down, glasses or cups, whatever it was, upside down.
BFM 89.9, it is 8:26 and you're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn Sharmila and Michael, who is sitting in for Arvind today. And together we are talking about disaster movies, not necessarily disastrous movies, which a lot of people are starting to overlap now in the messages, I have to say. But that movie, Interstellar, is one that people, well, don't generally regard as disastrous. Now, I thought we could talk about whether it is a disaster, because I think it is, in the sense, but we've established that I have no standards. Because I think that it...
Oh, you're very welcoming, if you want to. All right. Welcoming in this genre.
Because I think, you know, it starts with the Earth being blighted. Like, I can actually use the word blighted. But if we go to Michael's, yeah, but where's the disaster? Then perhaps not so much.
When we started the show, I wouldn't have called Interstellar a disaster movie. But seeing all the messages that are coming through and throughout the course of this conversation, I'm realizing that people play fast and loose with this all the time. And so I feel like it actually encompasses a few things that have come up already, right? One being humanity sort of going through this huge apocalyptic thing. The other is the space disaster, which a lot of people have also brought up. So I don't know, maybe it does contain enough of those elements to count, even though to me, it's not something that would come up.
We haven't even finished discussing Roland Emmerich's stuff yet.
The dismissive, like, are we at Interstellar when we haven't finished Roland Emmerich?
Interstellar, I don't think it's a disaster movie. I mean, because mainly, okay, the Earth is completely destroyed already. It's already a disaster by itself. So it's more like a hopeful kind of thing that people were trying to cope with what and try to find a new world for it. I think this brings me back to another point. But I mean, you talked about the ending of the movie, of a disaster movie. People want to feel something, either it's hope or helplessness or whatever, but there has to be a conclusion. Nobody wants to be stuck in a movie where the volcano is still erupting by the end of the movie. Or the zombies are still, like World War Z even was not even very hopeful. He found the thing, he found everything, but there was no conclusiveness to it. I think that's what a disaster movie should be. I mean, there should be a conclusion to that disaster. Armageddon, the asteroid is destroyed. And that kind of thing.
I don't think we've talked enough about solutions, actually, while we're talking about endings. Because the thing about Interstellar and, you know, we get into like Kip Thorne territory and just all the rest of it, is that there is a sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Not cohesiveness. You know, when you have there's a credibility, yes, that is attached to the solution. But I really enjoy it when there's absolutely no credibility, when I'm not even sure, like, who the crackpot is, who's talking to the president, who's saying that this is the way that we should go about things. There's something very enjoyable in that for me as well. And I feel like we haven't talked enough about the level of problem solving that we see in disaster movies.
Oh, that's hands down one of my favorite things. So I have a couple of things to say about that, right? One of the things I noticed about movies like Dante's Peak and Twister, as much as I keep saying I love the 90s, 2000 genre, I hate how little the women in it are given to do. They're usually the sort of scientific sidekick that are just kind of there to give instructions, but ultimately sit out the action. So you have actresses like Helen Hunt or Linda Hamilton just kind of feeding lines to Bill Paxton and Pierce Brosnan. Where else? Then you have the other aspect of it, which is just the hardcore crackpot who no one believes in and then like has the solution, who knows that the moon is going to fall to the earth, or who knows that if we set off this flare and send out this spaceship that we'll be able to destroy the asteroid. I mean, these are things that have become part and parcel of the genre. Some, I'm glad they persist because I love the crackpot. Some, I really hope people do away with. Like, honestly, we haven't talked about a single film that actually had a female protagonist at the front of a disaster.
That's what Lee Jun is saying, who says, I think most disaster movies cast have a white savior complex. The hero who saves the day is typically a white American male. And then goes on to say, though, only the brave. This one may be considered a disaster prevention movie instead of the usual movie tropes of thousands dying and one great savior with ridiculous solutions or super sci-fi like tools. We have desperate volunteer firefighters trying to prevent a huge catastrophe despite being chronically underfunded. So I think a few good points there. But I will say that when we were discussing the clips that we wanted to get and discussing this show as a whole, Sharmila and I really struggled to come up with women who were at the heart of these movies. I think part of it is when the bulk of them were made, but the other part of it is also perhaps just the expectation of the story and the fact that disaster movies haven't come further than, yeah, the guy has to save everybody.
The American guy.
Mm.
Or the American guy has to get back to his family who is halfway across the continent.
Yes.
And who haven't done anything useful, by the way, you know, throughout this thing. They've only there usually to serve as a guilt trip, which is the worst part, I think, when you see that happen.
No, and also when we talk about the world ending, it's usually not the world. It's New York or at most San Francisco. And you know, no one cares about the rest of the world unless you're doing like a sequel and then perhaps the next one is set in London. But it's definitely one of those things with the genre. And when we talk about things like American exceptionalism, disaster movies is one where you see this over and over again. And I admit we buy into it. I admit that, of course, Hollywood is based in the US. Of course, they're going to talk about their own states. But I wish that there was a little bit more imagination, if nothing else.
But I think it's because most disaster movies are from Hollywood. So they're all American and English. But if you look at Train to Busan, Kingdom, those South Korean movies and shows are actually apocalyptic and as disaster movies as well. So I think it's because of what we watch, because we get so much of these Hollywood movies that we think that way as well.
I wonder whether other film industries are perhaps not even interested in telling those kinds of stories. Not even because of budget, because Bollywood, for instance, has budget. Korea now does. But I don't think that that particular type of storytelling is something that appeals to every culture.
I think so, China did one big one, The Wandering World.
The Wandering Earth. Yeah.
Yeah,
so
that's quite big. Yeah.
I was going to say, but Wandering Earth is actually about technological solution, right? I mean, in that same way that we're talking about, it's, oh my Lord, it's the Interstellar of China in that, you know, we accept that the world is gone and now we're just talking about trying to save it through like massive ludicrous science or scientific intervention. So I think it's different in that sense, in that they're not interested in like blowing up the Great Wall, for example.
Or, you know, saving the president multiple times again and again. And
he would never be in danger. I don't think a film would be made in China in which he is actually in danger.
It's also the other thing, right? And we see this in other films, the whole our military is the greatest, our fighter pilots are amazing, our space force is the best. Like, these are all very, very American traits that have been fed to us through American film. Again, two sides. I've deeply enjoyed them. I'm not saying that I'm above any of this, but I think it is interesting when you sit down and realize how much of it goes back to a particular country's like vision of itself.
I can't think of any disaster movies from, let's say, Britain that comes to mind right now, except for zombie movies like 28 Days Later or even Shaun of the Dead. But those were so different from the zombie movies from Hollywood. So I think it comes down to the culture, the budget, and what people want, who's their audience as well.
I feel like they're too understated and self-effacing to actually think that, you know what, let's destroy the Earth. But they do get thrown in usually late in the game in an American film, though. It's like, I've heard from London and Beijing, they're gone. And then that's it. So that's all we know.
Unless you're funded by China, and then they will play some pivotal role in the story.
It's very important. You have to understand.
And one of the Chinese actresses will be one of the top scientists from China as well.
Yes.
Just helping. We also have Legion back to give a local stand, saying, waiting for a Malaysian disaster movie called Banjir Balak. The trees have come to life. They've uprooted themselves. Now they're creating floods and releasing tigers into the cities. Meanwhile, the Prime Minister is busy. This movie will never see the light of day.
Wow. That's something I'd actually like to watch. I mean, it doesn't sound as much as a disaster film as it does sound more like a horror film. But I think that has legs.
Aren't we already living in it?
I mean, the trees haven't literally come to life, lah. But yes, otherwise, perhaps some of these happen.
I think this one's ripe for writing and then filming and then maybe getting banned. But I think it can be done, is my point. Meanwhile, Waikit says, 12 Monkeys scared me for years as a teen.
Oh, you know, again, I think maybe this is one of those genre brain jams. For me, 12 Monkeys is so sci-fi that I never think of it as a disaster film.
Are we talking about time travel now?
Oh.
Yeah, so that's the thing, right? I think for me, 12 Monkeys is... maybe because it's you don't get to see that much of the disastrousness again, right? This is more of a solutions-driven thing. A pair of messages about Armageddon, neither complimentary. So Nigel says, Armageddon, the script was a disaster. Thank God for Liv Tyler. KY Speaks on Twitter says, well, Armageddon the movie is a disaster against physics, so it is a proper disaster movie.
I agree. I completely agree. But I will still watch Armageddon anytime it's on TV.
I think disaster movies, you need to have a certain suspension of disbelief. If it's too real, you don't want to watch it because it's not fun anymore. Because you don't want to imagine yourself being in it. But you can see all these characters on it living this kind of crazy life with crazy technology and everything, saving the world. So it's a fantasy in sorts. You don't want a disaster movie that's too real as well, right?
We also have this from Jason who says, unpopular opinion, Melancholia is a way better disaster movie than Interstellar. Hated Nolan's pseudoscience. So a lot of strong opinions coming in right at the end.
Not going to comment on Nolan, although that is something that many people say about his films. Melancholia, though, is a great shout. It's not a disaster movie in the box office sense, but it's such a great film. Depressing downer of a film, but it's a great film if you can sort of work yourself up to it.
How about movies that are already in an apocalypse? Do you count that as a disaster? I mean, you're just talking about people trying to survive in a world that's already gone. So that's not a disaster movie, is it?
I would argue that it is. It's just that the disaster is ongoing, right? We don't always need to be that, the genesis, I feel.
For me, that would fall, again, more into post-apocalyptic, I think. Unless, of course, then you have like a disaster that's going to happen in the middle of a post-apocalyptic setting. Like, oh yes, all of this has happened, but now they're letting loose the hounds and everyone's going to get eaten to death. Then maybe I would think of it as a disaster film.
So I'm going to close off today by asking if you... Although I think we've kind of laid our stakes out quite clearly, but if you were to recommend one disaster film for somebody who is perhaps a doubter, what would you go with?
Oh, okay. I'm going to say this first because otherwise Michael's going to steal it from me because I want to say Twister. It's so great rewatching it. And I think just there's something about the self-contained quality of the film that I really enjoy.
Armageddon, because you don't want to miss a thing.
Oh no, you look so pleased. Mine's going to be Banjir Balak, but it hasn't been made. So because of that, I guess, I don't know. I recommended it yesterday. I'll just do it again because I really enjoyed it. And it was the exact kind of adrenaline, nothing rush that I wanted. And that is Moonfall.
Oh no, you did it.
Long may he reign. That's all I have to say. All right. So that is it from us today. Michael, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So we've been talking today about disaster movies. Keep those thoughts coming. Do you like them? Do you not? Do you have favorites? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. Write to us at movies@bfm.my. I've been listening to Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.